From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
What's not to love about primroses? And I felt that way even before I read Elizabeth Lawson's deep dive social and cultural history of them in her new book, Primrose. She'll introduce us to the best primulas for our gardens today and some primrose legend and lore. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Elizabeth Lawson, author of the new book Primrose, is a naturalist and writer from Ithaca, New York, with a doctorate in botany. She's also the new president of the American Primrose Society, and she's here to talk primulas today. So welcome, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, I almost feel like we ought to give one of those sort of, you know, legal disclaimer warnings before we start talking, like, trying these plants at home can be habit-forming, because they are contagious, aren't they?
Oh, they are. There's no question. Primroses, they have character and extraordinary details, and their saturated color is... You know, it's like wine. You get addicted.
and the fact that they're, I don't know if all of them are early, but the ones that I know are early, and that's a welcome thing sometimes too, yeah?
That is probably the most important facet of their character that appealed to people for centuries.
Yeah.
You know, maybe before people understood weather or were frightened by it, but primroses were the first, and that's what their name has meant, little first one.
Huh, little first one. Okay. As I recall, you're telling me when we've spoken before, the book Primrose came about, it's part of a series, it came about because you proposed it to the London-based publisher yourself. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So tell us kind of how that happened.
Well, I guess it's my family history, we're all interested in natural history. And probably 10 years ago, I bought a book called Snake that was produced in Reactions Animal Series for my son, who raised ball pythons since he was a kid.
Uh-huh.
It's a beautiful little book. And then I found out they had a botanical series, and they did Rose and Lily and others. I thought, gee, there's no primrose. And, you know, primrose has been declared one of the three great garden genera, along with rose and lily.
Huh.
And so I retired from teaching, and I thought, I'm going to write a book proposal. And I knew how to do it from other work I did. And, you know, within several weeks, they said yes.
Mm-hmm. And Reaction is the name of the publisher, yes?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's funny that they didn't have it in their botanical series because it's sort of like the English think the primrose is their thing, right? I mean, isn't it? Yeah.
I know, and I was almost a little abashed as an American to suggest, you know. But really, we have one of the greatest primrose breeders of all time. Florence Bellis was an American.
Uh-huh.
So I had that history to work with. So I knew. And now, you know, the primrose belongs to every country. You know, there are breeders in Japan and Europe, and no, the primrose has circled the globe.
Yeah, and what I was fascinated to learn about in the book, many, many, many things in this sort of cultural, social history of the primrose that you've written. There are actually native primroses to many wide-ranging places, including Utah and Colorado and Alaska and Missouri. And, you know, I didn't know that.
And actually, I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
And that was part of the fun of writing the book. I did spend about 3 years doing the research.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a primrose right at the tip of South America, Camila Magdalenica. There's one in Mexico. No, it was like a geographical tour of some lovely places on the planet.
And some very preposterous places that it feels very hard to live to me. I mean, the descriptions, like some of the habitats are pretty tough habitats, aren't they?
Oh, yes. And one of the fascinating things is that in the late 1990s, a new species of primrose was discovered in Italy in the Dolomites. And there's a picture in the book, a full-page picture, of two little primroses way high up on a limestone cliff, just tucked away, almost invisible, and really exquisite species. Now, I'll have to check. It may not have been the Dolomites, but anyway, it was the mountainous region of northern Italy.
Right. And again, not the kind of place that we think, oh, this is lush habitat for for a plant to want to grow.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I loved that sometimes you can tell from their physical characteristics some of the species, kind of where they're from in terms of whether very northern or very, you know, that some of them have certain physical traits. And for instance, that word, it looks like the breakfast cereal, farina. Tell us about that, for instance.
Yes. Well, a number of species that live in areas where there's high irradiation and at high altitudes mm-hmm. have this this thing called farina, which is a white powder that creates really exquisite effects. And one of the most famous primulas, the Aricula, is the one from in the Alps, and it was first discovered in Vienna, at a botanic garden, this hybrid that became the basis of what we call today the auricula.
Mm-hmm.
And this white powder that breeders have now manipulated, or really not even manipulated, they just grow many seeds and collect the seedlings that have the most beautiful sort of dustings and ornament. It's almost like a makeup.
So they select for that trait.
They select
for it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But it's something, you find it in northern species more,
And Sweden. There's a wonderful mm-hmm. breeder in Sweden and who let me offer several photos for the book. And there's hardly a flower that has the kind of decorative effects. And it's all the result of this powder.
Yeah. So you just said auricula. And so the whole world of primroses, of primula, the genus primula, it kind of has a whole language of its own. And some of it we've heard, even lay people who aren't into plants have probably heard the word primrose and the word maybe even cowslip or oxlip. And, you know, a little farther along maybe in their knowledge, auricula. So maybe tell us a little bit about, so what's a primrose, if you're a primula fancier? What's a primrose versus one of the other things?
Well, yeah, that's a hard question to answer.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, when particularly maybe the British Isles, when someone says primrose, everyone thinks the common primrose, the English primrose, the Shakespearean primrose, which is Primula vulgaris.
Uh-huh.
But in this country, when I learned and started to educate myself on primroses, it was the primrose, and Primula itself is used as both a common name and the Latin name.
Right.
So, and that's where the confusion is. So you'll find, you know, plants online in nurseries, and they'll call it Primula something or other if it's a hybrid, or they'll say Primrose something or other.
Mm-hmm.
So in the genus Primula, there are probably 450 species, and there are hundreds more hybrids. And so Primula auricula, which some people think is one of the most beautiful of the scientific names. It's so euphonious, Primula auricula.
Yes.
That is a wildflower from way high up in the Alps. But then what we call the auricula today, they're all a hybrid.
Yes.
Of a yellow one and a pink one, and which had their own scientific names. There's endless, one of the things about primroses is there's endless variety, and you can create that variety in your own garden. You know, you set them out and they can hybridize and do their own thing right in your own garden.
Huh. So let's talk about in our own garden. What are sort of, you know, you said 450 or 500 species, and we talked about, you know, a little bit about like some of them come from, you know, hanging off dolomitic limestone cliffs in a high altitude or whatever, not a place like my garden. So what are the sort of gateway primulas? What are the ones that Elizabeth would say to us if you're going to get started? And again, with that caveat that you'll probably get addicted because they're each one is more charming than the next. You know, what are some of the ones you would want us to get started with?
Okay. Well, one place I was thinking about that question, and my husband has a garden center in Ithaca, New York. And so I would tell listeners, you know, go to your nearest garden center and see what they have.
Uh-huh.
And in most cases, they will have at least 5 to 10 different kinds of primroses. And one thing that would be is a good tip is to go to a wholesaler's website.
Yes.
For instance, Sunny Border gets a lot of primroses from there. And if you go to their website, they list 46 different kinds of primroses. And, you know, you type in your zip code and you can find out the nearest retail one near you.
Right. Right.
But now I have a list of about 12 primroses that you will find usually in a garden.
Uh-huh.
One is called the drumstick primrose, and it has sort of a pom-pom of flowers set high. Easy to grow and it's charming.
And what is it in a particular species then? What is this?
It's Primula denticulata.
Denticulata?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in the British Isles, they call it the Kerry dumpling. the sweet name. You'll often find in the trade Primula vialii, which is also called the orchid primrose.
Mm-hmm.
And they're lovely, sort of a little cone-shaped oval, and they ripen from the bottom up. So the lower part of a pink one may be quite light pink, but the tip, the flowers at the tip are very dark.
Mm-hmm.
So I highly recommend gold-laced primroses. There's one that's in the trade called the bumblebee, and you can buy them as plants, and there are others called the silver laced. They're often sold as Primula elatior Victorian hybrid laced.
Huh.
They're easy to grow. They come up. You can divide them. They're very beautiful, and they're very old.
Mm-hmm.
That was a mutation that appeared back in the 18th century.
Huh.
And they've been propagated ever since then.
Huh.
I also recommend the doubles. There's a new series of doubles that come out of England that are sold here in the United States by Bluestone Perennials.
Yes.
And they're the ballerinas. There's one called Amethyst Ice, Cobalt Blue, Pink Ice, Buttercup, Valentine. Lovely, hardy plants. They do like kind of a moist, humusy soil, but really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
If you like, you know, sort of some of the novel forms, there's Primula Blue Zebra, which is sold by Michigan Bulb. Mm-hmm. And it's a very decorative, it's sort of a purplish blue with white stripes. You know, one of the things that primroses do is create these, what the Elizabethans called frantic and foolish primroses. You know, and one that has been worked on is called a Primula You and Me Blue, and is what's called a hose and hose.
Yes, I love those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have two. It's a very hardy plant, and I have two in my garden that I got from Bluestone, and one, I took a picture of one of them that is in the book, and so I really recommend that.
So hose and hose, it's almost like there's a flower inside a flower. Is that how would you describe it? It's like a flower tucked inside another flower or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the Elizabethans used to wear two stockings, and they would turn one stocking down over the other stocking to create this sort of effect of a twosome.
Yeah.
Another primrose that's available at a number of places is, I don't really know of any common name, it's Primula kisoana. We had talked about that. It's different in that it spreads. It's rhizomatous.
Yes.
So some primroses sort of are rosettes. They just sit in one little place, and they don't, you may have to divide them, but they don't spread through runners.
Right, they don't go sideways, right. But kisoana, and it's my favorite, actually, of all of them. And it often has like an orchid kind of lavendery, pinky kind of colored flower, but it can be white. It can be white, too, I understand.
And it has these soft, furry leaves.
They're beautiful, scalloped in shape and almost a blue-green, not your typical shaped primula leaf.
Yes, and I just planted a little chunk of one, and it's spreading, it's really lovely.
Yeah, Arrowhead Alpine's catalog often sells that. That's one that I've gotten at Arrowhead or sent people to Arrowhead, yeah.
Yeah, and there are a number of other ones that do, too, that I found.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to put a plug in for Primula siboldii, which is also called Sakurasso. It's the cherry blossom primrose, and it comes out of Japan, and it's been cultivated for 400 years. It's kind of like the auricula. It was a cult flower.
Right.
But it's called the idiot-proof primrose. Sunshine Farm and Gardens in West Virginia has it available. And it's interesting because like Primula kisoana, it spreads, but it also goes dormant. If it's too hot and it doesn't like the conditions, it loses some leaves, and it drops back and puts its energy and life into the rhizomes.
Right.
It can take every type of light and soil conditions.
Huh.
And it's a really exquisite addition to a garden, and it can take very, very low temperatures.
Uh-huh.
Alaska.
What about japonica? Do you like japonica?
Oh, the candelabras?
Yeah.
Yes, I have to say that they are bewitching. And I had thought my garden was too dry for them. They're happiest with very, very wet feet.
Yes.
If you have a stream or a swamp, so much the better. But I had a kind of a Primula japonica adventure this summer and ended up with 8 huge pots given to me, and I planted them under an old apple tree, and so far so good. If the conditions are moist enough and rich enough in humus, they'll do well.
Right. We have about 5 minutes left, and I want to make sure to tell people about you've been mentioning some of the sources and so forth, and there's some sometimes one can only get seed, but that shouldn't stop us, should it? Like, for instance, Barnhaven Primroses. We can't talk about primroses without mentioning that name, can we? And the American
No.
Primrose Society, you have a seed exchange, I believe. So tell us a little bit about – you grow them from seed too, don't you?
Yes, and that's one of the first ways I fell in love with them. Yeah, I would suggest checking out the American Primrose Society website. What's great about that is that there are a lot of resources, and there's even a link something you can click on called Primula 101.
Yes.
And it has some of the basics about seed sowing. And the membership, digital membership in for the American Primrose Society is only $25 a year. And once you're a member, you can go back through all the quarterlies to 1941,
uh-huh,
when Florence Bellis started her Barnhaven seed strain. And there, and yes, you cannot talk about primroses without talking about Barnhaven.
Yeah.
And I would also go to their website, and it moved from, when she retired, it moved to England.
Yes.
And then when they retired, it moved to France, and now it's gone to a second place in France. And Jody Mitchell and Lynn Lawson have just published The Plant Lover's Guide to Primulas, published by Timber Press.
Yes, so that's another great resource.
Oh, it's beautiful photographs, and it shows you what's good for particular sites, and it has all the horticultural advice you would ever want to know.
Yeah. So if one joins the society or one shops on one of these catalogs like Barnhaven, and you get seeds. If you join the society, you can participate in the seed exchange each year. Is it important to seeds only planted? I just want to make sure in the last minute or so that we find that. Are they only at a certain time of year that you can plant them? Must they be fresh? I mean, are there any urgent rules of when you plant them?
I don't think there are any urgent rules in my experience.
Okay.
I collect seed and I put it in my icebox, in my fridge. And some people sow fresh seed, and some people, give them a cold period and then sow them in January or February or March.
All right.
I sow them whenever I can.
Yeah.
One reason I suggest, browsing through the quarterlies is there are all the articles are written by home gardeners.
Yes.
Who share their experiences, what works and what doesn't. And it's an incredible treasure trove. Some trouble with some gardening books is the situations are so idealized.
Here
you have your friends saying, well, that didn't work, but then I tried this, and so with the Barnhaven book and checking out what the American Primrose Society has to offer, you'll be enchanted and growing primroses for the rest of your life. And they're good plants when you get older, because they're generally tend to be little and you can move them around.
Yeah.
And, for bad backs and rusty joints.
Well, Elizabeth Lawson, the book is Primrose, and it's kind of a social and cultural history of them, a real deep dive into them. And I will have a book giveaway with the transcript, and I'll give all the links to the things we've been mentioning. Thank you so much for making the time today to talk about primroses.
Thank you for your website and considering primroses.
Okay. All right.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books and gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. And find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.